You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. I'm Matt Weston. Tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, the fattest, the drunkest on them all, our good pal BFD. How are you doing tonight, man?
Hey, this is my second beer, so I got some stuff done tonight, and I opened up a beer, and here we are. I've beer and a half. I'm ready to talk Texas football. What else do you want, man? This is life. This is living large.
Yeah, I'm part of the shamanhood, so my body's a temple now, so it's just filled with Mary Oliver poetry and Texans football and meditation and exercise and all that sort of stuff. And so my brain is very nice. Like, the wrinkles have been massaged so far, and it's fun for now. And then by the time, like, March comes around, it's all pretty good. You have so much time. Like, it's unbelievable. But so did you know that Deshaun Watson is the greatest player in the history of the wild card round of the NFL playoffs?
I still, that game on Saturday was insane in the membrane. I mean, I just don't, I've never seen a game like that or even close to it. And I've watched a lot of foosball over the years, and that game was just utterly freaking insane. But that, what Deshaun Watson did over the last, you know, including overtime over that last 30 minutes or so, was just absolutely, you know, I'm going to go get a tattoo, and it's going to be of Deshaun Watson, and it might be a full body pick.
Like Uncut Gems instead of a butt tattoo that says Howie. It says, I don't know, Deshaunie or Shawnee.
Something like that.
Yeah, maybe we can do Shawnee instead. I wonder what his middle name is.
The guy's dreaming.
Yeah, so the play that's the greatest play in, you know, the history of, I think, the entire NFL. So in overtime, the game was tied 19-19. I think it was, no, 16-16 entering overtime. And J.J. Watt won the coin toss, which was important because he gave the Texans an extra drive the Bills did not have. So both teams punt. The Texans have their third drive. The Bills had a 3rd and 9 on their drive. That would have been 4th and 5. And they may have gone for a 4th and 5 where they were at. But Cody Ford, blindside hit penalty, pushed them back to 3rd and 24, which then led to 4th and 24. And it led to Houston the ball at their own 37. It's 3rd and 17. The Texans faced 3rd and 18 after a Sarron Neal sack where he was a free rusher. Watts on 3rd and 18. Saw pressure, dumped off to Duke Johnson, who converted against a, you know, stick zone defense where they're just sitting down at the first down marker, which was an incredible play on its own by Duke Johnson. Then on 2nd and 6, the ball at Buffalo's 44. What the Bills did was they blitzed Milano off the edge from linebacker position. The Texans slid their pass coverage one gap to the right. Milano was able to get around Roderick Johnson, hit Deshaun Watson in the back while Neal came from the other side. And whenever Watson saw Milano, he steps up slightly, which leads to Neal, you know, kind of not hitting him head on, but kind of side. So he's pulling him down. And Milano, rather than wrap him up and you make a competent tackle, he tries to, you know, murder Watson. And both plays act against each other like two positive magnets. And Watson's able to spin out. Tawan Jones runs like a curl route, and he slips out of his break. And he just, like, keeps inching closer and closer to Watson, who dumps the ball off to him. And at the play, Hyde on that play, he's playing like man cover. He's kind of helping double DeAndre Hopkins, where he's stopping. He's kind of taking away the vertical route, or he's playing the deep out route so White can focus on the vertical route. And by doing so, he's able to, you know, be covering Jones, but he's about, you know, 5 yards off him and makes that catch. He's, you know, even with him, Jones cuts out inside. He takes a bad pursuit angle, dives and misses. And then Jones proceeds to run the ball all the way down to Buffalo's 10-yard line. 19-16, the game is over at that point. So, BFD, How good is our Deshaun Watson?
Dreamy. I just don't even know what else to say. That play was like when if you play a lot of billiards, play a lot of pool, eventually you'll get that shot where you know balls hit each other and they two balls hit one and both everything just comes to a dead stop, right? And that's what that reminded me of. It reminded me of some funky trick billiard shot that was how Watson was able to get out. And then you watch the interview with Watson and he's like, "Oh yeah, I knew I was going to take that. That was no bigs." It's like, dude, you're insane. Mm-hmm. But he did. He did. And what that's special enough. But what really is that cherry on top when it comes to Watson is that he kept his head up and looking downfield and sees Tywan Jones and throws a strike on the run after that, after just getting pummeled by two guys, and throws a perfect ball. I mean, people don't do that. That's not normal behavior by a quarterback.
And the kind of funny thing about that play too, it was spectacular because of the moment, but it's not even a play we haven't seen him make before. We saw him make plays like that against Seattle last year, against New England, or I guess Seattle in 2017. It reminded me of that spin out tackle he had against New England as well in 2017, where you're like, or he breaks the tackle every single member of the pocket. That he made that same sort of play against Philadelphia last year too. And then this year it was kind of similar to that play he made against Oakland where he got kicked in the eye, except that was against one defender instead of two defenders. And so, you know, as miraculous as this play was because this is the NFL postseason, this is still like kind of mundane in a way just because he makes a spectacular, just so routine. And so it's not anything we've never seen him do before at all. It's just like, yeah, this is Deshaun Watson. These are the things that he consistently does that kind of make it, I don't know, it makes it kind of unremarkable week 9. It's like, oh yeah, that's just Deshaun Watson. Then here in the wild card round, it's you know, it's the greatest play in franchise history. And it was unbelievable. The other thing that was really funny about it too, like I wrote about it today and described it as a mystical experience. And I think that's the best way to describe it, where it, whenever it happens, there's no word. It defies all language. It gives the viewer, or it's a passive experience, and it gives the viewer a deeper understanding to something that remain to be unseen. And I think the deeper understanding I gained from it was kind of something that I knew, but it became concrete now, is that as long as Deshaun Watson's on this team, it doesn't matter who the coach is, it doesn't matter how terrible the offseason is, it doesn't matter how bad the game plan is for, you know, 50 minutes, it doesn't matter who's on the field around him, as long as Watson's on this team, the Texans can win. I think they can beat any team except for, you know, I think they could beat any team on any given Sunday or whatever, but they're not out of any game no matter what the score is. Just because of how remarkable he is as a player.
Yeah, it's you know, we've talked about it before on the show, is that I don't think there's a team in the NFL that is as reliant upon one player as the Texans are upon Deshaun Watson. With Deshaun Watson, they're a 10-6 team, 11-5 team. Without Deshaun Watson, they're a 2-14 team. They're a 3-13 team. It's just the difference that he makes is so amazing, that the what he's able to overcome single-handedly. No other team can do that. I mean, maybe Tom Brady. I don't think so at this point of his career, for sure. I just think Deshaun Watson is a 7-8 win guy, and that's utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, what is Pro Football Focus's WAR has him at? Like plus 3.2 or something?
Yeah, and that's rubbish.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no way.
You can't even make WAR in an NFL game, in an NFL season, because it's only 16 games, you know?
Right.
And, like,
right.
I don't understand why they even try to make that stat at all for it. But they try. Good for them. Bless their hearts.
I mean, you look at J.J. Watt in his prime is, like, a 0.7 WAR kind of guy, you know?
Maybe
a 1.
In 14, he was, like, a plus 2.7 or something like that. When he almost had the 2020 season, and he had 4 or 5 touchdowns on his own.
Yeah.
And it seemed
like... No, he's still like a 2.5. Well, yeah. But he's not Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, no.
I mean, it's just...
Of course not.
It's position important, so anyway.
Yeah, I was dying...
It's crazy.
I was dying laughing today because the Cowboys hired Mike McCarthy to be the head coach, which is just... It's just an offensive coordinator version of Wade Phillips, except McCarthy's not even as good on the specific side of the ball that he's on. But it's like another thing where it's like, it's bland. Jones can push him around. He's kind of dumpy. You know, he's, you know, like the players are going to take advantage of him and he can't control the locker room, that sort of thing. But the PFF main guy, it's like, this is a great hire by Dallas. He worked really hard in his off year. He came to our offices and looked around at what we do. That's like, good. I'm glad. I'm glad the Cowboys meet run now. Based off Pro Football Focus's numbers, and I'm glad it's a great hire for him.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, look at the guys who were there attached to, Marvin Lewis and McCarthy. It's like, man, they are really shooting to be a 500 team for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, let's set those sights high.
Well, and they're the anti-Texans this year, too, where they won, like, 2.5 games less than expected based on their point differential. And they were, like, I think they had the second-best offense by DVOA and everything else, and they just lost a bunch of close games this year.
Yep, and the Texans, say it, we talked about it before the show, say it, we are 9-3 in one-score games this year. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, after starting the year 3-3 in one-score games, they've won six of their one-score... They didn't win six one-score games in a row, but they won six of their one-score games in a row to be here in the division around the NFL playoffs. So going back to Watson, in the first half, he was 6-8 for 49 yards. He was sacked 4 times, and averaged 6.1 yards an attempt. In the second half, he was 9-11 for 116 yards, took 2 sacks, and averaged 10.5 yards an attempt. And then overtime, he was 5-6 for 82 yards. That one incompletion was a Darren Fellows drop on third down. He was sacked once, and he averaged 13 yards an attempt. So, BFD, what was the biggest difference in his game between the first half and the second half?
So just give a little props to a friend of the podcast, Texans Thoughts. He was one of the first people who I saw say it. But it was not being scared. And specifically what I mean by that is they were trying to play DeAndre Hopkins in the slot for the first half and to try to avoid Tre'Davious White, and it did not work. I mean, you can't play scared. You can't play football scared. Bill O'Brien does that a lot. He plays terrified a lot. That's why he give Carlos Hyde the ball so many dadgum times, is because he's scared. He's scared to let Deshaun Watson actually look good. And so I think once they finally just kind of gave up on that and put DeAndre Hopkins on the outside again, then all of a sudden Hopkins was lighting stuff up. Then you have Stills in the middle doing things. I think ultimately it just had to, it was a combination of getting Hopkins back out and Watson just kind of going, you know what, I'm just going to throw the ball down the field. Because in the first half, he played scared too. And I think that it kind of goes hand in hand, right? When your game plan is really conservative and playing not to lose, then that's what your team is. That's how your team's going to play. And I think that's how they played in the first half. In the second half, Watson was just like, F it, I'm going deep.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even then, he only attempted one pass over 20 yards this game. And it was, of course, to DeAndre Hopkins down the sideline against Tre'Davious White. And I think that was one of the things that was different, was that, you know, they used him in the outside a lot more in the slot. And the Texans have done that all season long. They've constantly used DeAndre Hopkins as a slot receiver. He finished third in first down receptions. He was second behind Julio Jones and Michael Thomas. And they've really just kind of turned him to a crappy version of Michael Thomas this year, where this season he has a DVOA 6.3%, which is 31st. And again, this is a guy who was the best receiver in football last year, and now he's the 31st most efficient one because the Texans are so focused on using him as an interior receiver to catch passes for 7 yards, 6 yards, and pick up first downs. Now, the reason for that is that the pass defense is really bad, and the offense's entire goal has not been really to score points. It's been to, you know, score enough points and then limit the amount of drives that their defense faces, have a ball control offense that, you know, averages 2.5 minutes on the play clock, averages, you know, 7 yards a drive and that sort of thing, just to keep the ball away from keep their defense off the field as much as possible. And so, yeah, I think the first half, one of the things they did was they tried using the slot. He was against Tre'Davious White, but he was against, you know, their nickel corners and their safeties. And then they have one-on-one matchups across the field that their players are unable to win. DeAndre Carter couldn't get open on his, like, 4-yard drags. Kenny Stills, he ran a lot of, like, deep crossing stuff that really kind of ran against their deep free safety. Darren Fellows kind of tried to sit down against zone coverage. And I think the other big problem that they had in the first half was when they would play man in those situations with Hopkins on the interior getting doubled, their guys just couldn't win their one-versus-one matchups. I think Carter, I think Fells and Stills all kind of really struggled to get open on those crossing routes and, you know, short curls and those sorts of things.
Yeah, and a couple of things I want to throw out that really jumped out at me. And one of them was that, you know, one of the criticisms of Watson was that he's holding on to the ball too long. Yeah, because you hold on to the ball too long when nobody's open, because mm-hmm. your route tree is so the same. So they had a couple times where they were trying to go high-low, but the guys were within like 3 yards of each other. You can't throw high-low combinations when they're that close. Mm-hmm. Everybody's that close. And so, I don't think necessarily it was it had to have been. Somebody was messing up the route. But I cannot imagine Bill O'Brien's going, okay, you run down the 42 and you run down the 45. But you can't throw passes like that, because then you're basically throwing in a double coverage whenever you try to hit either of those guys. Mm-hmm. And so that was one thing that really jumped out at me. Either do the high-low right, either do the flood right, But there was one play in particular that there were three Texans within 5 yards of each other. I mean, who draws that play up?
Yeah.
Who calls that play?
Well, and that's been happening all year as well, too. Like, that Baltimore game is a great example where you have guys who are within 2 yards of each other, and then, you know, Kiki Cutie became the scapegoat on it where, you know, it's his fault. He doesn't understand the playbook. Look how close he's running these routes. And I don't know, this is a game where it happened again, too. And I think their route trees are very predictable going into it. It's like they have these game plans going into the week, and they never work. And then it takes them 40 minutes to understand it, and they switch things up, and then they're competent in the second half. But, I mean, this entire season, they've been completely beat in the first half. They've gone into, you know, the second half either behind, and they take advantage of opportunities that have been there the entire game. And they just it just takes them so long to get to that point to actually take advantage of those mismatches.
Yes, and then there's the God, I lost my thought. The route trees are what threw me off. And then, dadgummit, I forgot.
It's okay.
Hopkins inside. Yeah, my bad.
So DeAndre Hopkins didn't have a catch until 10:03 in the third quarter. And on that catch, he immediately fumbled because he held the ball out with one arm. Like he was, it was like that picture, that kind of meme of somebody holding a baby with one hand, like he's holding like a big burrito or whatever. And that's how Hopkins has been holding the ball for the entire season. And he's been very fortunate with those big hands to not get stripped at all or anything. And Tre'Davious White stripped him. It led to a Buffalo Bills field goal after J.J. Watt forced a sack on third down against Cody Ford. And then after that, Hopkins had 6 catches on 8 targets for 80 yards. And so in the first half, again, there's a lot of stuff in the slot. On the second half, the big catch, of course, yeah, was man versus coverage, 1 versus 1 against Tre'Davious White down the left sideline, where he got separation off the line of scrimmage. I mean, that catch he had was spectacular. The throw was spectacular, too. He also had a nice out route against White sitting in zone coverage. And then he had a really good, like, deep dig route to create first downs as well, too. And this is kind of something that I know I've been hollering about. We've been hollering about on the show. It's that DeAndre Hopkins is a spectacular outside wide receiver. He's a sideline wide receiver who can get in any sort of 1 versus 1 coverage against man. And he can win that matchup opportunity no matter if it's an all-pro cornerback like Tre'Davious White or if it's a cornerback next weekend that the Chiefs have. And so whenever you have those opportunities, like I understand all the first downs, I understand all the ball control stuff, but he's much better on the sideline. And it was great to actually see them finally utilize that throw again. And hopefully next week against Kansas City, we see more of it as well too.
Yeah, and that was what I wanted to bring up. It's the kinds of routes we're asking him to run. It seems like when we're throwing Hopkins the ball, his back is to the end zone, right? He's facing Watson a lot. He's running the curls. He's running the stuff. That means no yak.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not even given the opportunity to do something. He's not the most explosive. He's not like Cordarrelle Patterson with the ball in the open field. He's just not. But he's not bad. So get him while he's moving and the ability to do something after the catch. Instead, we're asking him to do, catching a lot of balls on the sideline, catching a lot of balls on the curls. You don't do much after that. There's no yak after that. That's what drives me most crazy about Bill O'Brien's offensive passing game plan is there's so much back to the end zone catching. Yes, it's a thing that needs to be done. I get it. But when you have some dynamic wide receivers, Hopkins and Stills, look, they can do more than just like sit in a zone and catch a ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean, it's just been kind of just like constantly where it's, you know, slants and drags and quick curls against off man coverage. And you really kind of lose how great Hopkins is at beating guys off the line of scrimmage with his releases, with how he uses his hands and his quick jutes and those sort of things to create coverage downfield too. The other big play, the first time they try to go to him is that first third down and completion, where, you know, he punches Taron Johnson in the face, comes back for the ball, and Johnson makes a play on it, and then he's looking for the penalty. It's like, you know, there's times whenever it's warranted, but you hit the defense back in the face isn't a time for that, you know?
I enjoyed the heck out of that, I gotta say.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. But yeah, that was kind of funny, though.
Yeah.
So looking at these sacks, so Watson was sacked 7 times, and a lot of this kind of conversation for us, well, he's holding onto the ball too much. And I don't know, going back and looking at him, I don't really think it's the case. His first sack was on 2nd and 6. It was a bootleg. Jerry Hughes just outruns Laremy Tunsil and sacks him from behind as Watson's rolling out. 3rd and 3 was a coverage sack. Nothing was open. But on that play, Matt Milano beats Duke Johnson, creates pressure immediately, and then Trent Murphy cleans him up from behind. I think one of the things that was really great about what the Bills pass rush did was that they actually made plays on Watson. Murphy had a really great game actually tackling him throughout this one. The third sack was on 2nd and 6. Nothing was open all in the short pass game. It was a lot of curls and drag routes where there was a man on everybody. Murphy was able to hand fight with Clark to create separation. He forces Watson to step up in the pocket, and he was able to actually come back up whenever Watson tries to spin back outside and make that sack. The fourth sack came on 1st and 15. This was immediate pressure where you have Jerry Hughes blocking Darren Fells. And again, don't block defensive ends with tight ends. It never works at all. Sack number 5 was on 3rd and 9. This was an Edmonds coverage sack where he chases him out of bounds. Number 6 was on 3rd and 3. Trent Murphy was unblocked off the edge. Nothing was open. And then Hughes came back from the other side and cleaned up. And Hughes had 3 sacks this game. And number 7 was on 2nd and 9 when Sierra Neal comes unblocked off the edge. And so looking at these here, you know, 3 of these are really coverage sacks. And then the other 4 are plays where there's just immediate pressure. The other one of them, you know, there's pressure, but Watson gets away from it, and the coverage sack leads to, you know, Murphy kind of clean back up. But this wasn't a case where Watson's holding onto the ball, creating 7 different sacks. This is a case where there's either immediate pressure or there's nothing open. And, you know, when going back to that conversation too, what makes Watson so great is his ability to make plays out of the structure. You want him to hold onto the ball. You want him to take risks. You want him to extend plays, because when he doesn't, then you lose the play that won this game. You lose the dump off to Duke Johnson. You lose what makes this offense great and what makes, you know, Watson such a spectacular quarterback to begin with. And so I don't think you can really have any conversation of, you know, Watson holds the ball is such a big problem for the offense, because it leads to the plays that are the actual reason why this team wins football games.
Yeah, and I think it was sack number 2 is the one that specifically jumped out at me. Has it was 3 guys within 5 yards of each other. And you can't blame that on Watson. You know, that's the 3 guys he's got to. And we also have this tendency to go to max protect and put 2 guys out in routes. And so if those guys aren't open, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the Bill O'Brien concept of, okay, we're going to just put 2 guys out in routes, and there's going to be 4 guys covering them, and then Watson's going to get sacked. That doesn't seem like the best strategy I've ever seen. God, there's so much I want to say all at once and just kind of blurt it out sometimes, and I can't. If you go back to what makes Deshaun Watson really different, and that's why when we'll often talk about, like we said it in the game theory, could you imagine X having Deshaun Watson in their offense? It's because Bill O'Brien continues to treat Watson like he's Tom Brady. He wants him to sit in the pocket. Yes, he rolled out a couple times. Yes, there's that RPO to Daniel Fells for 2 yards that he likes to do every once in a while.
On the first play coming into the third quarter was that stupid zone read to Darren Fells, and I almost threw the dog out the window. I was so upset. I hate that play so much, and I'll probably make some videos to post on social media or on Twitter tomorrow. Like, this is this play in Kansas City. This is this play against Baltimore. This is this play today. It needs to just be completely removed from the offense.
Oh, yeah. That was totally a good grabber, by the way.
Gosh.
Yeah. So, but what else can you do with Deshaun Watson? Well, you roll him out. You change those passing angles against the defense. And Bill O'Brien just doesn't do that very often. And so it's the sort of thing. You gotta focus on what Watson's strengths are. And they really aren't sitting in the pocket, making 3 or 4 reads and then hitting the guy that's open. It really is just being, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to get him out of harm's way, especially with that offensive line. We're going to get him out of harm's way. We're going to roll him out, not naked, and let him do something outside the pocket. And that's what I want to see more of. Mm-hmm. And that's where he's special. I mean, look at that. The everybody's talking about, and we've talked about both of the plays. We talked about that where he gets hit twice and throws that ball to Tywan Jones. Look, that 3rd and 18 to Duke Johnson was crazy sauce.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how often do you see something like that? That stupid picket defense they had backfired because Duke Johnson needs the ball a heck of a lot more than Carlos Hyde does, Big Matt.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. And so I think there was 2 things that I liked what the offense did from the entirety of this game. One was that I really like the fact that they use Colin Gillespie, however you say his name, at fullback. And the reason why I like that, I don't like the idea of the fullback. I know you're not going to like this, but going back and watching the film of their run game, one of the problems that they have is that they like to run lead, they like to run power, mm-hmm. they like to run counter, and they do that with Darren Fells pulling. They do that with Jaron Akins pulling. And like I understand Darren Fells is 6'7", you know, 265, whatever he is. He can't block. He's an awful run blocker. He doesn't driving by out the hole. He can't block defensive ends one versus one. He can't do that at all. Jaron Akins is also a miserable run blocker. They also don't know who to block. There's so many situations where they end up blocking the same guy as the pulling tackle or guard. The really funny plays, too, whenever they try to be like Baltimore, where they go like full house backfield, and they're like, oh, we're gonna run power, you know, with both these tight ends pulling. One's going to kick out the defensive end. There's going to pull up to the linebacker, and they both block the defensive end. And it's miserable. And so at least with like Jalaspia, he can actually block a linebacker. And there was four or five good blocks he made where he actually, it's a lead play, where he actually gets up on the linebacker and makes a hit. The big zone replay Watson had, he read Trent Murphy on it. Murphy sits, Watson keeps. Then it's Jalaspia against Jordan Poyer. And Jalaspia drives him, you know, 15 yards down the field and creates that hole for Watson to do that. If that's Darren Fells, Fells doesn't make that block. Akins probably doesn't make that block at all either. And so, like, yeah, like, I know it's funny, and, like, just the idea of Jalaspia being taken the seventh round or, yeah, whatever he was, you know, has been kind of, was, you know, funny at the time. But just, like, his ability to actually just be strong and be powerful at the point of attack and not be Darren Fells, I think, was valuable for this offense on, you know, five or six plays this game. And instead of those plays being a zero-yard gain or a two-yard loss, they picked up, you know, 6 yards and led to Houston's first touchdown this game, too.
Yeah, and let's also props to Duke Johnson for blocking two guys on one play on that two-point conversion.
Yeah, and you know? I mean, and that should have been a crackback block, too, on that play. And the Cody Ford one is, that one's the one on Duke Johnson hitting, you know, Edmonds like that on there.
And I thought that Cody Ford crackback, I thought that was kind of a weenie call.
I thought so, too, just because Martin looked at him. Like, Martin was staring at him.
Face-to-face.
And they were face-to-face, and he wasn't blindsiding him at all, either.
No, I didn't like that call.
The second thing I liked about this game, too, and I wrote about in the preview, is that this is not a good game for Carlos Hyde. Carlos Hyde doesn't break tackles. One of the things that the Bills really struggle with is tackling. Carlos Hyde had a broken tackle rate of 13.3%. Duke Johnson's was 26%. Duke Johnson has broken as many tackles as Carlos Hyde on less than half the amount of touches. And so in this game, Hyde had 3 carries for 38 yards, which comes out to, you know, like, you know, 13 yards a carry, 12.67 yards a carry. And he also had three catches on 3 targets for 30 yards in the pass game. Now, he only had 3 carries, but he had a long for 18. He broke a bunch of tackles. He was electric on those 3 carries. And I know they gave him those carries in the first quarter, and they really went away from it. And I thought that was very strange, too, where it's like, this thing works really well. You game plan for it. You're set up for it. And now you're going to go completely away from it and go back to feeding Carlos Hyde. Hyde in this game had 16 carries for 48 yards, which comes out to 3.0 yards a carry.
Sometimes I'm just speechless, right? Like you keep giving Carlos Hyde the ball. You keep giving him. So he's 16 for 48 with a long of 8. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's like the anti-dynamic there, right? That every one of those carries was a loss, was a waste of an offensive snap. Every one of those carries was. Even the 8-yarder, I don't care, because that was just random luck. I think he had an 8 and a 6. And when you've got Duke Johnson on your team, okay, let's say we can't run the ball. Why don't we just throw the ball to Duke Johnson and use the short pass game as a run game?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not a great offensive block, you know, run blocking team. We just talked about it. We don't have anybody, Tunsil to a limited degree, but Big Matt, you know this better than anybody else who watches this team. Nobody on this team can get to the second level. We lose so many yards because we can't get to the second level with our run blocking. Zach Fulton is awful at it. It drives me crazy because he's so bad. So why don't we do other things rather than just keep giving Carlos Hyde the ball and running him up the middle?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the offensive line this year has been better at blocking the second level whenever they run like strong double teams. I think they've done a better job at it than they have in previous years. But the bigger problem is never it's Jaron Akins and Darren Fells blocking the second level, because that's constantly how they use them. But they run trap pretty well. They run dart pretty well. They're an egregious outside zone blocking team. And I'm glad they've kind of gone away from the. They didn't really block the outside zone all this game. And I think really the most frustrating thing, though, it's like, you know, I watched the film on it, wrote about it, and I didn't like the Texans' running offense matchup against the Bills because of what they typically do. And I thought, well, they need to make sure they run more dart and power and that sort of thing. And they really didn't at all to get their offensive lineman blocking the second level. But I said they should not use Akins at all. They shouldn't use Fells at all. They should try to use Jalaspia some. And then the other thing, they just should give Duke Johnson more care. Or I didn't say they should use Jalaspia. I said they should get their offensive lineman to the second level more. And that led to Jalaspia playing instead of, you know, Akins and Fells in run situations. But the other thing was to get Duke Johnson more carries. And they started off doing that. And they just kind of went away from it entirely, kind of came back to it at the end with the you know, the zone read that Watson was able to turn into a touchdown. But overall, though, I think it was very frustrating where they had a good idea, they had a good game plan coming into it, and they just didn't stick with it, and they went back to what they've been doing all year. That hasn't worked very well at all this year, too.
Right.
So, in this...
No, and I really appreciate your comments, by the way, about Gillespie replacing those two other guys. The thing is, you know, I don't know what... Glassby is not going to give us anything in the passing game.
It just signals a run. But I don't know. I've never seen him catch a pass in the flat. Like, him catching a pass out in the flat can't be any worse than, like, Darren Fells doing it. You know?
Right.
And at least you have some, like, element of surprise with him doing stuff. Fells just running behind the line of scrimmage. Like, oh, I know what this play is immediately. This is easy, you know?
But fullbacks aren't people. Yeah, just gotta remember, fullbacks are not people.
Yeah, I wrote that like Texans all decades team and even name a fullback, and it really upset a lot of people that I didn't name Vontae Leach at all. It's like he played 1 year and fullbacks don't exist.
Yeah,
and if he was so important, they would have re-signed him. So this week, in establish the run.
Oh my God,
Carlos Hyde had 10 carries for 31 yards, which is 3.1 yards a carry on first down. Deshaun Watson had 8 carries for 40 yards, just 5 yards a carry. Duke Johnson had 2 carries for 19 yards, which is 19.5 yards a carry. So total on first down, the Texans had 20 carries for 90 yards, which is 4.5 yards a carry, 1 touchdown, 2 first downs. And most importantly, we have BFD's newest stat. This is a groundbreaking new frontier in analytics. It's called Chum, which is Carlos Hyde up the middle. And Carlos Hyde, the middle of this game, had 11 carries for 32 yards, which is a grand total of 2.91 yards a carry.
Yeah, it's those first down chums. I mean, we saw it in the game on Saturday. You chum, you get 2 yards, Deshaun Watson sack, and then you're third and long. And that happened on three drives on Saturday. So you're always behind schedule when you have that situation because you're just, you know, great. We started the game with the pass on first down, and then it was 3 chums after that. And teams are prepared for it. I mean, it's like even Mike Vrabel, the leader of men, picked up on it. The Texans just run the ball up the middle on first down every dadgum first down. So, you know, this isn't a tricky thing. You have to break pattern. And Bill O'Brien, that's what I mean. Bill O'Brien plays scared so often, and this is example number one of playing scared. You got to quit giving Carlos Hyde. He had 3 good games all season. The rest of it was trash.
Mm-hmm.
You can't rely on those 3 games, you know, Saints, Ravens, and
the
Jaguars.
Chiefs. He was okay against the Chiefs.
He was okay, yeah. And then, but it was really those 3 outliers.
And I don't think he was really that good against the Jaguars. It was just he had those 2 big runs because the Jaguars had, I think, the 31st DVOA against the run because they had some of the worst linebacker play in the run game you'll ever see. Just their run fits were egregious, and Miles Jack's not a play side on-ball linebacker at all. Oh, so I looked at so Chums on first down, 6 of them for 17 yards, which is 2.83 yards a carry. He had carries of 1 yard, 1 yard, 1 yard, 2 yards, 4 yards, 8 yards, tackled by Kevin Johnson. Duke Johnson had two chums in this case on first down, 1 for 9 yards, 1 for 10 yards.
Speechless. Speechless that you keep giving the scrubbiest guy on your team the rock 16 times.
The fight, I think it was the Tennessee game whenever Deshaun Watson was like, after the game, was like, yeah, Carlos Hyde's our man. You know, he carries the offense. We got to lean on him down the stretch. I was like, just kill me right now. I want to die so badly. This is the worst. Like, he's completely brainwashed right now. And that made me so upset. And then also, like, Carlos Hyde posting, you know, which is, I don't have anything against Carlos Hyde at all. I think he could be, you know, better in a different situation where, like, he gets more carries against light boxes, that sort of thing. But, you know, him posting that on Twitter, him flexing his biceps, like, I'm glad that he's pumped up and ready to establish the run, because I'm not at all whatsoever. And then it was also interesting about this game, too, from a run offense perspective, was that, you know, looking at the numbers entering this game, was that Buffalo has a mediocre run defense. And it really kind of was, and they just had a few problems, and a lot of it was tackling, a lot of it was getting blocked at the second level, and then making their safeties miss, their linebackers miss, and it really wasn't that great of a matchup for Houston, and I think it kind of played like that as well, too, and I think Houston could have had a great running attack, but they just didn't focus on the things that worked, that they saw, and they did a little bit of, they just didn't do enough of, and I think it was really, like, a really great example of just having, like, the numbers and the film, you know, combined together to tell you an entire, like, true thing of what's going on with something. But,
well said.
Yeah, it was a fun thing to write. The last thing I have here is, I think the one matchup that they could have gone to more if they didn't was Kenny Stills against Kevin Johnson.
Kenny Stills!
And Levi Wallace was out this game, and Levi Wallace is their second cornerback, and they pretty much just have Wyatt and Wallace play each sideline. They don't really move guys around and follow anybody. But what they did this game is they had Wyatt pretty much play the sideline, Hopkins was on, and then Johnson played the other sideline from there. And this led to a lot of one-versus-one matchups of Kevin Johnson against Kenny Stills. Now, Kenny Stills had 4 catches on 5 targets for 46 yards. The one miss was that, I think it was Taron Johnson was covering him, or Neal was, where he ran that deep post route. And Watson has made that throw to him probably 9 times this year, and he just slightly overthrew him. And I saw a lot of complaints online after that throw. It's like, look at the guy right up in the middle. It's like, yeah, but they haven't taken any shots deep. Stills has him beat. He just slightly underthrew it. He had made that throw, like I said, like 9 times or so this year to Stills specifically. But I think that was the matchup that was available to them throughout this game. They just didn't go to enough at all.
Yeah, that one kills me. And also Duke Johnson, he only got 3 targets.
Yeah,
3 targets.
He caught all 3 too.
Yep. You have 2 great guys in space, and they got a combined 8 targets. Gotta take advantage of those matchups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, let's look at it this way. Devin Singletary got 7 targets.
Yeah, I really like him too. He's a legitimate running back number one. Like, I think the complaints that we have about Carlos Hyde, imagine being a Buffalo fan, and I kind of am a Buffalo fan. Like, my 3 favorite teams this year were, you know, Houston.
Kinda.
I mean, like, the Houston Texans were my favorite team, and then it'd be Buffalo, and then Tampa Bay. And, like, every Frank Gore rush, you're like, why are we still doing this? I think Singletary averaged, like, 1.5 more yards a carry than Gore did this year. And Gore had more carries than him during the year because Singletary didn't take over the starting role until, like, week 7 or whatever. But yeah, he was a lot of fun. So is there anything else you want to add about the offense on Houston's end?
No, I just want to say a friend of mine throughout the game was texting me every time Frank Gore carries the ball, something like it was some totally melodramatic thing. It was completely hilarious. So I put it through a couple of those in the hair of the dog, you know,
every time
Frank Gore, you know, carries the ball, an angel kills a puppy kind of thing. That's what this guy was texting me like the entire game. It was absolutely hilarious. It was sad. It was sad watching Frank Gore do this. You know, Frank Gore is quite literally the most literal construct of health is a skill, because a dude has almost never gotten hurt, like, seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been around for like 13 years and has gotten his 4.2 yards to carry for all those years. And
do you think he should be a Hall of Famer?
I just don't even know.
I don't think so either. He's part of the Hall of very good.
Yep. The Hall of being healthy.
Yeah. The Hall of playing for a really great power run scheme in San Francisco that even Carlos Hyde would have been very good in. So moving on to Houston's defense, the Bills and Texans had opposite first and second halves this game. So Buffalo's offense in the first half, they had 36 plays for 250 yards, which comes out to 6.9 yards a play. In the second half in overtime, they have 44 plays for 207 yards, which comes out to 4.7 yards a play. And Houston's offense in the first half, they ran 20 plays for 92 yards, which is 4.6 yards a play. I think Deshaun Watson had like 62 yards passing in the first half. No, he had 49 yards passing in the first half, which is still like unbelievable to have Deshaun Watson against any defense and be shut out an entire half. And then the second half, Houston had 45 plays for 297 yards, which comes out to 6.6 yards a play. So really their entire offense is kind of reverse sides on the first half. So what was the biggest difference you think between the second half of the Bills offense and the first half of the Bills offense?
I think they had, let's look at the first drive. They had that Josh Allen quarterback sweep, and then they had that throwback pass. It was like they used all their gadget plays in the first drive or two, and then that was it. Mm-hmm. They were kind of done, and the offense just kind of died after that. Then what you had is you had Jacob Martin stepped up, and then Whitney Merciless had his moments, but J.J. Watt. I mean, what I saw in the game, one thing that really jumped out to me in the game is that they didn't play J.J. Watt almost at all in the first half. It was like, okay, this is a passing down. Mm-hmm. Watt's going out there. In the second half, it was J.J. Watt's out there for every deck and play.
Yeah, I think
that's what it felt like.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that was one thing that happens that Watt went from being like third down, here he is, where our defensive line is D.J. Reader, Brandon, Angelo Blackson, which has been fine against the run, but against a rushing attack that gets guys on the outside, like they do, it really didn't work out very well. And Watt was actually able to get into the backfield and make plays on the ball too. And I think just in general, the second half, Houston's defense just made a lot more plays. Merciless forced that fumble with that sack from behind. And it was the exact same play made against Phillip Rivers earlier this year, where like he got a toenail on the ball and was able to force one out in that case.
He didn't touch the ball. Allen dropped it.
I think he got a toenail on it.
Oh, BS.
I think he got a toenail on it. At least like the impact of the tackle led to it falling out, but that was the exact same play against Phillip Rivers, but just in a much meeker version of it. Watt had the tackle for a loss. He had the quarterback hit that forced a throwaway. He had the sack against Cody Ford, which forced a field goal. Jacob Martin drew a hold whenever he's being blocked by a tight end. That was a great throw by Allen at the end of the third quarter that removed a first down from them. That would have put them in field goal range just about. They would have been on the edges of it, but then that holding penalty led to a punt. And then also, Martin had the 4th-and-27 sack as well, too. And so I think just the defense as a whole made more plays in the second half than they did in the first half. Another really, I think, important play was the Zach Cunningham tackle on 1st-and-10. When Buffalo ran that same sweep going to the right-hand side, and both the tight end and Cody Ford, I believe, just ran right past Zach Cunningham. He was able to make that tackle for a one-yard stop. And it looked like Allen was about to get like 12 yards or so in that play, after getting 44 yards in that play in the first half.
Yeah, that was a smash, man. Allen was totally surprised by that hit, too. I don't know if it felt like that to you, but it was like, oh, my God, I just got destroyed.
Yeah, because nobody destroys him.
Not only that, is that he had two guys miss mm-hmm. Cunningham on the way through. That was kind of crazy. That one kind of threw me off a little bit. The other thing that really caught me is that Josh Allen went full Case Keenum. Is that he had those two really long sacks, one of them was a sack and one of them was an intentional grounding. But he was running backward. And have you ever seen a team like move back that far? It was like 44 yards in two plays.
Yeah. Well, and what's funny about that too is that they still scored and tied the game even after all that. That was such a weird thing too, where he takes the intentional grounding, and that was against, I think that was against a three-man rush. And one of the things I think Crennel did a really great job of in the second half to create pass rush after not really having one at all was that he started lining Watt up on the interior after Wise refused to do it all year long. And so it started working against the Colts that game when he was the entirety of the Texans pass rush. And now here he has come back from a torn pectoral and he's like rushing as a four-eye, which is kind of funny. And they also used Merciless really well and Martin really well, having them stunt inside against the Bills' slower guards. Like Feliciano's, and Spain are both like really big, wide guys. If they get their hands on you, they're kind of screwed, but they're kind of slow. And so by getting Marta on the interior, Merciless on the interior like that, he was able to create pass rush. And I think that was one of the reasons why the Bills pass rush was much more potent. I mean, the Texans pass rush was much more potent the second half than the first half.
I mean, do you know two like really super sexy football bloggers who have talked about moving J.J. Watt inside to give the team the best possible pass rush combinations? Do you just happen to know two guys who've been talking about that for three years now?
Yeah, like 3 years or so. Something like that. Yeah. I don't know. I wonder how much of it's like they're trying to preserve him and how much of it's Watt's like, no, I want the right tackle. And that's what I want,
Lots of rumors.
Yeah. I have no
idea. That's all I'm going to say.
I have no idea. And that's also kind of one of the things that always frustrate me too about the whole Jadeveon Clowney. He doesn't get 10 sacks thing where it's, Yeah, because Clowney's getting the left tackle. He's getting the tougher pass rush matchup while Watt gets the right tackle, and he gets, you know, Cody Wheeler and Jadeveon's rushing against Nate Solder. And Solder's not like a great player, but he's much better than, you know, Chad Wheeler is in that game. But the other thing I think too with Allen on that play was that those are just two like completely stupid, irreprehensible plays. And I think this is like just one of the most beautiful Josh Allen performances ever. He was 24 of 46 for 264 yards. He had no turnovers, even though Bradley Roby dropped two picks where he's sitting on the curl route. Like he's seven yards off him just sitting for the curl. And whenever you know the route and you see that coverage and he's sitting at the break on the ball, you just go, yeah, I'm not even going to look that way. The second one in overtime is even more egregious or in the fourth quarter is even more egregious because he's throwing the ball all the way across the field against Roby sitting at the same depth of that route. But he also made like six spectacular throws. He had nine carries for 92 yards. He really had a good job. He had a great game short passing against Houston, but it was the deep passing where he struggled, which was expected. On passes from the line of scrimmage to 10 yards up the field, he was 19 of 26 for 173 yards. On throws 10-plus yards, he was 5 of 16 for 91 yards. And on throws over 20 yards, he was 0 for 5 for 0 yards. And I think Houston has had a really good deep pass defense all year. They did that by keeping Tayshaun Gibson just staying there in center field, and they had a good deep pass defense again this one, even if they struggled playing man coverage against, you know, Duke Williams and Cole Beasley and John Brown and Singletary. They missed a ton of tackles this game. They've been that good tackling all this year too. So what did you think about the Josh Allen playoff experience? Did you enjoy it?
The first drive was a lot of fun. I mean, it was a ton of fun. You got to love a guy who can do that. And the rest of it was what I expected from the Josh Allen experience is a guy who might throw a dime on a 19-yard pass, and he did it a couple times, just threw absolute BBs, and then with the next throw, he hits the mascot. You just don't know what's going to happen. So it was what I expected, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it was Josh Allen. And, I mean, some of the throws he made were unbelievable, and then some of the throws he missed were unbelievable. My favorite play he made, though, had to be in overtime when they run play action and the Texans rush two. They rush two and he has all the time in the world to throw. And what you want Allen to do would just be to like escape the pocket or just stay still and like look and wait for somebody to come back to the ball and find him. Instead, he rears back, throws cross field to Patrick DeMarco. They're 235-pound, like 6'1" fullback in a double coverage. And it was just so wild. And the funny thing about that too is going into before their game time field goal attempt, that was the play they ran. They ran play action. No, I think it was before the two sacks on first and 10, they ran play action and he threw that pass to Mark on the corner of the end zone. And like that was what they were going for. And like Daboll kind of had some really absurd kind of play calls too and kind of decisions that he made by even like utilizing DeMarco in those instances at all whatsoever. Like, why is the fullback running, you know, 45 yards down the field to begin with?
My favorite thing about that play is especially after watching DK Metcalf last night, like high point that last catch that he had to seal the game and how beautiful that was and how well timed it was. Patrick DeMarco missed that ball by what, like 4 yards?
I think he jumped whenever Allen released it and then jumped again. Like he was like, he was trying to grab an offensive rebound and dunk immediately afterwards.
Oh my gosh. There are a couple that one was awesome. But he also made a couple good throws, like that one John Brown throw on third down that should have led to a touchdown for them that instead led to just a field goal, where John Brown completely butchered getting his feet in bounds. He made some good throws, but look, the fact is the guy was 24 for 46. But the one thing that really struck me is as the game went on, did you see that he absolutely lost his ability to throw a spiral? I mean, he was throwing dead ducks out there the last two quarters in the fourth and the overtime.
Yeah, I think he did at times. There were a few throws where he did, and then there were a few throws that were still really good. But yeah, I mean, like he hasn't thrown 46 passes at all this year. He typically throws 30 passes a game. And it was kind of weird too, in overtime, they have that drive and it's like, yeah, we're not going to run the ball anymore. We're going to go five wide receiver sets. And I think that was one of the problems that the Bills offense too had was like in big situations, they went empty backfields with only five offensive linemen blocking. And Crennel just blitzed the hell out of Allen. And Allen this year was 28th in QBR. He was bad against the blitz all season. And then Crennel did a really good job at picking his spots, someone to actually bring the blitz. And he saved those for those empty formations. And, you know, a lot of those have free rushers where you throw at the blitz and they just didn't have any, they didn't see the blitz beforehand, have any sort of audibles that you go to saying that, okay, this is my free rusher at me. You know, I need you to run it out right here. Instead, they're running like a slant into the middle of the Texans linebackers. And there was just miscommunication, I think, for the Bills scheming on the situations too. But yeah, I mean, I love watching Allen this game. It was beautiful. He was spectacular. And I think a really good point you made, though, is that John Brown throw, where there's a few different plays where if his guy, you know, just makes a play, makes that catch, I think his stat line looks completely different. And I think you really brought up a great point in the hair of the dog was that, you know, the difference between this game right now is the Bills are kicking field goals. And if you kick field goals, you can't put a team away. And so they went up 16-0. They had four scoring drives at 16 points. And the Texans tied that game with two possessions after that point on. So Buffalo's field goals, the first one came on 3rd and 10 after Brown didn't get 2 feet in where he torched Bradley Roby. It was a great corner route, beats Bradley Roby completely, and he just doesn't stop at the boundary to get both feet in. The second field goal was at the end of the half where Duke Williams beat Gary and Conley, and he just drops that pass in the end zone, and that was a great throw from Allen too. The third field goal was the Watt sack. The fourth field goal was to tie the game at the end of the fourth quarter. And also in that Watt sack too, they ran that play action pass to Dawson Knox, and Allen throws him to the pylon. And if he just dumps it off to Knox as he's running in stride, that would have been a first down too, and that was a mistake for Allen. And so, yeah, I think the two biggest differences in the second half, though, or I guess in this game for the Houston's defense, was that the defense was bad. It couldn't stop the short run. It couldn't tackle. It couldn't tackle Devin Singletary. But it made enough big plays to their best players where Watt makes big play, made a big play. Cunningham made a big play. Martin made a big play. Merciless made big plays. Roby almost made two big plays. Conley had a big pass breakup in the end zone too. And that's been the kind of formula for the Texans defense for the entire season.
Yeah, that's why I think, you know, a lot of people are down on Romeo Crennel. And it's like, on paper, this is one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But every week they play above and beyond. Look, I don't care if this was Josh Allen. They held him to 16 points this game. Romeo Crennel and that defense won this game.
Yeah, and I think
along with the magic that's Deshaun Watson. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and also Buffalo had won. They had 11 possessions in the entire game, and then they had the 12th possession in overtime, and that was more possessions than usual. But the Texans have kind of gone by not having to face a lot of possessions, and this was a case where it was entirely different. The Texans defense was on the field a lot more. They had to play a lot more defense than they've been having to play this year just because of how ball control and efficient the offense was. But the offense this game had a few three and outs. They didn't hold on to the ball as much as usual. And Buffalo had, you know, more opportunities in this case too. But yeah, I mean, I think it was also an interesting game just from these two quarterbacks where they're both young quarterbacks. Watson's been in the league for one more year. And Watson playing at Clemson, who is like a five-star recruit, played at Clemson, played a national championship game. And then you have Josh Allen, who was, you know, what, like the sixth pick in the draft, wasn't even recruited out of college, walked on. I don't know. He had one offer at Wyoming.
Yeah.
The biggest game he played in his life was probably like a bowl game, like the Potato Bowl in Wyoming. And now here he is at 23, having played, you know, quarterback for like 3 years or whatever now. And a year. And also, he only played, I think, 7 games his rookie year because Jadeveon Clowney hurt his elbow. And he's in a situation where he's like playing on the road in a playoff game. And I think a lot of stuff's going to be made of like, you know, Allen's trash, he's inconsistent, he's terrible, that sort of thing. But I think like the situation of his age, the fact that he hasn't played in a big game like this at all before too, I think he played well considering all the circumstances, you know.
I will just say that the one thing that really struck me about Josh Allen's college tape is his inability to keep his mechanics intact over the course of a game. And so that's why I brought up the dead ducks and all the dead ducks. Like 10 of those throws were just terrible. When you're an NFL quarterback, it is important to throw a catchable ball. And Josh Allen throws the exact opposite of a catchable ball about 25% of the time. And I think that's going to hurt him because I'm not even talking about the accuracy. I'm talking about a wide receiver catching the ball in traffic. Yeah, man, having it stick. And he does not throw that kind of ball. Yeah. He just doesn't. And what's happening, what I see is his arm coming over the ball which is putting a top spin on the ball, which is forcing it down, which hurts his accuracy down the field. If you look, it's all the nose is going down in a weird spiral. That's what I see, and that's not a catchable ball. In fact, that's like the anti-catchable ball right there.
Yeah, yeah, I'll have to look at that whenever I watch him more. I think it's going to be interesting with him just because of his age and the fact that he's only had, like, you know, 21 starts. And he also just does things nobody's done before at all. Like, he just makes these absurd, ridiculous throws, tries to play NFL Street, makes these deep throws that are spectacular and beautiful, and then makes one that's obscene and horrendous. And I think he's just a lot of fun to watch. The other thing that's weird about him, I think the deep ball accuracy could get better. And he's just strange. I think one of his problems, like you mentioned, with his, you know, arm, he tends to miss a lot when his feet are bad. Like, he gets stuck and he throws like really staggered against the blitz, and he throws like completely standing upright and a bunch of different things like that. And so it will be interesting to see if he can actually like get that out of him and improve on it and become like a good quarterback, because he does have like all the athleticism and arm strength and talent and everything else.
The dude's got an arm. He's got an arm and a half. He just does not have any idea what's going on with it.
Or he knows what to do with it like 55% of the time. But whenever you're NFL quarterback, it needs to be 95% of the time, you know. So we'll see what happens. He's fun, though. The other things on the defense I saw that were interesting, one is that Tayshaun Gibson's out. I think Rivers really brought up a great point, was that he played, you know, 44 snaps against the Titans in a meaningless game. And, like, if you know he's injured, he shouldn't play. He shouldn't play in that game at all whatsoever. And if you know he's injured, why is he playing? Like, he shouldn't play at all, even if he was healthy. And so he's on IR. Yep. And so one of the first things I was interested in this game was, one, like, when are they going to use Y? And like we talked about, they use Y only on passing downs and use a lot more in the second half. And two, how are they going to use Justin Reed? Were they going to use Justin Reed more as a robber position closer to the box to help in the run game, help with the quick passing game, or keep him in the deep middle part of the field? And for the first 75% of the game, he played deep middle, and they played Jaleel Adai. They played Mike Adams in the strong safety position. And I think that really hurt the Texans' defense to start the game, too.
Crazy. Wasn't it weird seeing Adai out there as a single high safety at times?
Yeah, it was horrifying.
Killed me.
Yeah, it didn't bite him at all. But it worked, you know, just because the Bills are, like, as great as Allen's arm is, he's not an accurate deep passer. He'll make, like, an unbelievable throw like he made a John Brown that AFC's championship game. But he misses a lot of those. And it worked out okay. I think one of the things the Texans did good in the second half, though, was they put Justin Reed at the strong safety position. They kept Adams deep. They kind of took a die out of the game. And they also put Reed there in obvious, like, run situations. He made a really good play on Josh Allen to take away his zone replay. They ran first down in the fourth quarter, and he had more of an impact there in that spot. And that's very important going ahead to this week against Kansas City, because what are you going to do when you have Tyreek Hill and you have Mecole Hardman and you have Travis Kelce? Are you going to play two safeties deep? Are you going to have Justin Reed play man coverage because he's a better option than, you know, Lonnie Johnson or Adai is, or Gerrion Conley is, or Jonathan Joseph is, or anybody else? Or they can go back to, like, yeah, he needs to play deep middle, because we can't give up any deep plays at all. And so I think that's going to be another very important decision Crennel is going to have to make next weekend too, that he already had made this game as well.
That's going to be fascinating to see how we use him, because that's a lot of speed. Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill, that's crazy. I mean, they're crazy.
Mm-hmm. And they're both healthy. Yep. When the Texans played the Chiefs, Hill, that was his first game back from his broken clavicle. Patrick Mahomes hurt his ankle week before. He got hurt again, I think, by McKinney. He ended up getting hurt again the week after against Green Bay, or the week after he got hurt against the Chargers and then missed a few weeks after that. Or maybe that even happened before that game. I don't know. It's been such a long season. But I do think that Chiefs team is entirely different now than it was then. And like you talked a lot about too, Chris Jones is playing now.
Chris Jones.
And he's like J.J. Yep. Watt. He's a J.J. Watt level player. And Frank Clark is healthy. He's actually making an impact as well too. And those are, you know, this is a different Chiefs defense as well.
Chris Jones has been outstanding. I'm sorry, but Frank Clark has been, he's been terrible.
Better lately, but yeah, he was very bad to start the year.
Yeah, I that's not what they paid for. I don't,
for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have been better off with D Ford.
Oh, yeah.
And Ford's been hurt the hamstring injury. And he's going to be back next week for. Because the Niners are getting Ford and Quan Alexander back next week.
Oh, that's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge.
So the last thing I want to bring up on the defense were all the tackling issues. Devin Singletary was, you know, really shifty, really strong. He broke a ton of tackles. Dawson Knox broke that really important tackle against Vernon Hargreaves that created a first down. The entire defense was missing tackles. I counted 2 missed tackles from Whitney Mercilus against Devin Singletary. Or I mean, I counted 2 Whitney Mercilus missed tackles against Frank Gore, which I think you just have to retire if you miss Frank Gore on a tackle attempt. And I had a joke, you know, during the game that the Texans offense was unprepared in the first half because they were too busy extending Whitney Mercilus going into this game. And then also, like, the Texans defense hasn't been a good tackling defense at all this year. I believe they were 9th. They had the 9th highest broken tackle rate. The secondary especially has missed a ton of tackles. Conley's not a very good tackler. Roby's an okay tackler. Vernon Hargreaves an atrocious tackler. Lion Johnson's big as he is, he's a bad tackler. Jonathan Joseph doesn't even tackle at all anymore. Adai's okay. Justin Reed's a very good tackler. Mike Adams, he's 34 years old. He can't even get to a lot of tackles. And so you're in this environment where you had trouble tackling Frank Gore at times. You had trouble tackling Dawson Knox. You couldn't tackle Devin Singletary at all. And now you're going up against the Chiefs offense that has, again, you know, it has Hill, it has Hardman, it has Kelsey, it has like 3 different running backs who are all, you know, very fast too. And so it's something that's been an issue throughout the entire year that I think's been hidden. It was an issue last week. It's going to be an issue again this week.
I mean, could you imagine if the Chiefs still had Kareem Hunt?
Yeah. Yeah.
We'd just be ghosting people all game.
Especially in the passing game, too. He was very good in the passing game for Cleveland this year. You know,
it's going to be an issue. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would like to be the head coach of the Browns.
Yes.
It'd be fun.
That would be a lot of fun. It would be great.
I hope they make Jeff Fisher the head coach there.
Oh my God, that's hateful.
Who's
next, Mike McCarthy?
I only said that because of that that podcast where Lan Zeev is on the Moving the Sticks podcast that Texan Rev J showed us that Rivers clipped, and they were talking about how, like, the Browns just need a coach who has done it before, who can just manufacture expectations, who can, you know, manage the building well. And I was like, Jeff Fisher, that's who they need.
Oh my God, like, that's hateful.
9-7 would be beautiful for them, you know.
I thought Freddie Kitchens needed a year to learn and then you kick it in. I mean, if you give Bill O'Brien more than 1 year, then why doesn't Freddie Kitchens get more than 1 year? I don't get it. He got it sometimes. Brett Coleman tore down Freddie Kitchens so many times. I get it. But man, come on. Really? 1 year?
I just think the players didn't like him very much also, which is weird because they liked him the year before. And then I think also, too, like, it takes a really strong personality to be in a head coaching environment where you have Odell's lost his mind. Like, Odell makes a 5-yard catch on 3rd and 15, and then it becomes a celebration of Odell Beckham. And it's unbelievable. I've never seen anybody like it, like, celebrate the most meaningless plays at all whatsoever. And then with Jarvis Landry, and then, you know, like, they should have just ran Chubb a bunch too. And I think also their offensive line wasn't that bad, but Mayfield ran them into a lot of pressures that didn't exist at all either. And again, pass protection is more than your left tackle. It's the entire environment, it's the entire ecosystem. And again, the Texans traded, you know, 3 picks for Tunsil, and they're in a playoff game against a good Bills pass rush. This isn't like a top 5 pass rush. They're 12th in blitz rate. They have a good defensive line, that sort of thing. And Watson still sacked 7 times too. So that's important. You know, that it's not just your offensive line. It's your secondary blockers. It's your hot routes. It's your entire offense in general. So quickly, we had some, not quickly, that's a bad thing to say, but now we have some listener reader questions. The first one's from @TexansThoughts, who's now a friend of the podcast. It's Texans_thoughts. And if you like to tweet and be on Twitter during football games, he's worth following. He's very enthusiastic and optimistic and very, really enthusiastic about the Houston Texans, which we all are. We're very enthusiastic here too. So his question,
not necessarily optimistic.
The Texans Thoughts question was, how has the Chiefs defense improved? Linebacker still slow and can be attacked in the pass game from what I see.
So the things I've noticed is, number one, Chris Jones is back, and I cannot say how much of a big deal this is because he is JJ Watt to their defense. So he is that important to them. He makes Frank Clark better, who's been terrible this year. I have to admit, Tyrann Mathieu over the last like 5-7 games like did not suck, and he played some really good ball down the stretch. So that's different. Justin Thornhill has actually played some pretty good ball at cornerback too.
I think Thornhill may be hurt now.
Is he hurt now? Oh, I hadn't noticed. I hadn't had a chance to go check injuries. Wow. Yeah, so somebody asked about linebackers, I think.
Yeah, he asked
Eddie Hassan.
If he can still... Okay, Eddie asked that.
Yeah, so the linebackers suck. So we still have the good matchups there. Reggie Ragland is a straight downhill linebacker. I can't imagine how different this team would be if Derek Johnson was still there at linebacker. I mean, they would be that much better.
Like but 7 years ago, Derek Johnson.
Right.
I mean, he played for him 2 years ago and was atrocious.
Right. So, but yeah, they still suck. Reggie Ragland sucks.
Yeah, Ragland's so bad. I think one of the things that's important for him too, I know this is going to sound very silly, and it is. It is a silly thing, you know, to say, but it's true. But Anthony Hitchens is important for their defense because he's at least a competent linebacker. Like, he can actually tackle. And I know you're shaking your head, but he can actually tackle. And the Texans, he didn't play at all in that previous game. And then also the thing about Hitchens as well too is that if you don't have Hitchens out there, your backup linebacker is that guy from the University of Iowa who's really slow and especially atrocious, and that's Ben Niemann. And so the difference between Anthony Hitchens and Ben Niemann is like the difference between the sun and the moon. And they're not even playing Ragland that much. It's going to be Damian Wilson. It's going to be Hitchens. And like, I know it sounds very silly, but it is true that there's a dramatic difference between Hitchens and Ben Niemann, and I think that will actually have an impact on this game compared to their previous matchup when they just ran that zone replay over and over again, were able to control the ball and dominate against the Texans. And also, Thornhill has a torn ACL.
Oh, I did not know
yeah,
that.
It
okay,
happened week
bad.
16. Yeah, so he's out. But Tre'Varius Ward's good too. Their secondary's good. Their pass rush has been better too, and they've been a lot more aggressive with it as well lately.
Yeah, well, Hitchens is trash. I'm sorry,
he
man.
Can tackle
he's
okay.
Trash.
I'm not saying he's great. I wouldn't say he's trash. He's like very mediocre. But again, when you have the worst linebacker group in football, mediocre is very important.
And one thing about Tyrann Mathieu I want to throw out there is that he had 7 more targets than the next closest safety. Teams know to throw out Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, he is a focus out there. He just happened to play better at the end of the year.
Yeah.
He's still, you know,
and Fuller,
he's still not good.
Fuller beat him, what, 2 times in that matchup? And he had 2 drops, 2 really big drops on deep passes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and Hitchens leads the Chiefs in solo tackles. Or he leads the Chiefs in tackles. He's 2nd solo tackles and played 15 games. He has 4 tackles for a loss. This is good stuff here. Again, I will say he can be mediocre. And you know, attacking them in pass coverage is the best way to attack them, though.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, if Thornhill's out, it means Daniel Sorensen probably, and Daniel Sorensen's very bad.
He's terrible.
It's like watching Heath for the Cowboys. It's like that level of player.
Gosh. And Bashaud Breeland is also terrible.
Yeah,
just
Breeland's
really
bad.
Terrible.
Breeland's bad. Yeah, and like whenever they made that trade, they were all so excited for Breeland. He's not good. Well, no, I think, never mind. I meant I got him confused with their linebacker. That's my mistake. I do like Derek Nandi, though. I think Nandi's pretty good.
Yeah, he's got a cool name.
Yeah, Nandi's pretty good. He's like an interior rusher. So our next question here is from @Eddie_Hassan. Keeping in mind our bend don't break defense, do we have enough cornerback depth to stay with Chiefs receivers? They're low with speed, so we play in man coverage against Mahomes. How scared should I be?
Oh my god, the Chiefs receivers aren't fair. I mean, this is like Madden, and it's somebody like me drafting and only drafting the 99 speed guys, but these guys can actually also catch the pass. Mecole Hardman, like this guy's going to be a household name in another year. He's that good. So it's a terrible matchup for us. It really is, because Jonathan Joseph isn't going to play probably, which is probably a good thing as well. Mm-hmm. Bradley Roby doesn't have the long speed. Nobody has the long speed to hang with these guys except for Lonnie Johnson, and he's terrible at covering guys. So that matchup specifically is really horrible for us. As good as our matchup against their linebackers and secondary. This is bad with our secondary against their tight end and wide receivers.
Yeah, I don't see a good matchup at all for the Texans defense against this offense in a coverage perspective.
Yeah, man. If I'm Patrick Mahomes, I'm just like going, oh, fun.
Like even Byron Pringle against
right.
Garen Conley, you're like, oh yeah, I'll take that matchup. DeMarcus Robinson's even a problem. I guess the only lucky thing is, you know, Watkins was bad this year and was an awful signing at the time. I know whenever I write like the five worst free agent signings, I talked about Watkins like 2 years ago, and he hasn't done very much at all for the offense also. But yeah, I mean, there's no good matchups here. Like even covering Damian Williams and McCoy backfield and Daryl Williams is going to be problems too. I mean, I don't know. Like the Texans, I guess, are kind of stuck. It's either they try to let Deshaun Watson throw the ball downfield and play one versus one against the Chiefs and try to match him in points scored, or you go back to establishing the run, you know, attacking their linebackers, holding onto the ball, making this game as sure as possible, and then hoping you get enough big plays from Watt, from Merciless, from Martin, from your best players, and create enough turnovers to be able to create enough more possessions for yourself. And like every punt's going to be monumental for Houston this game. Like if they force one turnover, it's going to be very important. And so I don't know what they're going to do, but I mean, I know what they're going to do. They're going to play for ball control, limit the clock, try to take as little chances as possible. Do what they did the previous game, but the problem is that everybody's already caught on to what they did the previous game. So they'll have to add some wrinkles to it too.
Yeah, we're going to come out like it's a marathon, and the Chiefs are going to come out like it's a sprint.
Yeah, and the Chiefs have 15 turnovers this year in all offense, which is the third least this year. And I believe Houston forced two turnovers in that first game they played. Or they forced one that led to a touchdown in the half that really kind of changed that one too. So even looking at that first matchup back in week six, like I don't know how much there is to glean from it. And it was even then like a one-score game as well.
I don't think there's anything to glean from it because it's so different now. A healthy Mahomes, healthy Chris Jones, healthy Tyreek Hill, and who's in sync. No.
Yeah, and they had two turnovers that game, actually. Not just one, they had two. Remember, Mahomes thought there was an offsides or a pre-snap penalty and threw that pass in the end zone that was picked off by Lonnie Johnson.
Right, yep. Yeah.
And that took away at least 3 points.
That was Lonnie Johnson's entire 2019 highlight reel, too.
Covering Travis Kelce, okay, getting away with a pass interference penalty, one interception, then zone. I think Lonnie Johnson could be good in 2 years, but again, expecting anything from him at all this year was why I didn't like the pick. Because like they need a cornerback who can play this year, and they didn't get one. They got a project. Next question we had here from Eddie was, Andy Reid has outcoached Bill O'Brien numerous occasions. What changes on Sunday? Do we have enough to control the clock with their running game and get a W? And they just have to expand on what they did the first. They just have to create new plays that were similar to what they did the first time. I think they have to use Watson as a runner a lot. They need to run more bootlegs, a lot of play action. They're going to have to establish the run. I think you're going to see a lot of Jaloskia. They have to get their offensive line the second level, and they need to have Darren Fells and Jordan Akins blocking as low as possible. And then if Fuller is healthy, whenever they take their deep shots, they have to hit. And all that needs to be like 31 points, and the Chiefs have, you know, 8 possessions or 7 possessions or so. And the defense forces 2 or 3 turnovers.
Matt says that, and I agree. I mean, I don't disagree with what he's saying. But the thing is that we have to go out and we have to step on the accelerator and go score points. Because that's what the Chiefs are going to do. They're going to push the ball downfield. They're going to be successful against us. We can hold on to the ball as long as we can. But if it turns in, they're not going to be the Bills. They're not going to say, oh, yeah, we're going to kick a field goal here. We're going to not go for it in 4th and 2. They're going to keep pushing the ball and pushing the ball all game. We have to slam on the accelerator, and we're not going to.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a hard spot to be in. I don't know if they – and I think the other problem, too, is that they haven't been playing shootout very much this year. And so now you're going to play shootout against the top 3 offense after not setting yourself up for the situation this year, too. That's kind of one of the things that we talked about throughout the season is that, yeah, this stuff works. This ball control stuff has worked to win close games against teams with bad linebackers. But what are you going to do whenever it's the postseason and you're playing Baltimore, New England, or Kansas City? and you have to score 31 points, and you're not really prepared for it, because what have you been doing the entire year? You've been establishing the run on first and 10, and you're not set up to more vertical passing offense, except for whenever you're down behind, then your offense actually becomes the best version of itself.
That's why you can beat the Bills and you can't beat the Ravens. And even beat
the Bills 19-16 in overtime after falling behind 16-0-2. It was a fun game. I also want to say, it was a fun game. It was beautiful. Probably the best game in Texans history as far as, the enjoyment of it, being the postseason and everything else. Because, the other playoff games are boring, you know. The Watt thing was cool. The Johnson touchdown was cool, but they weren't very good games, and this was entirely different. Jadeveon Clowney destroying Connor Cook was incredible, but it was a bad football game.
I mean, the only other game that comes close for me is the 18-for-18.
Yeah.
And then, but that game on Saturday was, wow.
Yeah, it really was like a hallucinogenic trip. And I think my two favorite things I wrote this year was the incompletions article this week, where I talked about the mystic experience Watson was. And then last week, where I wrote a Airwood vault of Jameis Winston. So the last question we have here is from @r_Crossingham, which is Ryan Crossingham. And so BFD, what is your life going to be like on Monday after the Texans beat the Chiefs?
I am not at all worried about that. We ain't going to beat the Chiefs.
That's my biggest concern right now in my life, is how I'm going to feel on Monday after the Texans beat the Chiefs.
We ain't going to beat the Chiefs. I mean, we're not. This is such a poorly coached team on the offensive side of the ball. We're going to come out. We're going to give Carlson Hyde the ball. We're going to make him run up the middle. Chris Jones is going to snuff him out. Nandi's going to snuff him out. They're going to go up 21-0, and that'll be it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem for this game for Houston is I can see them beating them, but if they played the game 100 times, there's 5 times where this happens. And so many things specifically have to go right. It's an awful matchup all across the board. It's brutal. And at least they're here. I mean, that's a bad way to say it. I'm glad they beat Buffalo. I'm glad they're here. But yeah, it's going to be messy, I think.
Yeah, I'm not even glad we're here. I think the best thing that could have happened to this team was that we got shut out on Sunday and we get rid of Bill O'Brien. I ultimately, he holds this team back so badly.
Yeah.
And this is a holding pattern. This is what we are. This is our apex right now, is we won a playoff game. It's number 2 mm-hmm. that we've won in 6 years under Bill O'Brien. This is our acme. This is as good as we get.
Well, I want to say, I think one of the things that's been really great about this year is that new things have happened. You know, they beat the Chiefs, they beat the Patriots, they won a fun playoff game. I was expecting the season to be disastrous. I'm very surprised by it. But what had to take for it to have happened is they won plus 2.2 more games than they're expected to win based on their point differential. They went 8-3, 1-score game. So a lot of very fortunate things happened for it. Their defense was 15th in turnovers forced, but they faced the third fewest drives this year. So they had a very high turnover rate as well, too. And they have to get a lot better this offseason, I think, is the biggest thing. This team isn't entrenched where they're at. They have to get better this year. And then everything about the resources that the Indy has available to them, maybe Tennessee too. And I think next year should go different. They can't win how they won this year again next year. And Watson's have to get better as a passer. The offense has to get better around him as well too. A lot of different things have to have happened. But this year in the moment's been fun. And I'm excited for next week, even if I don't think it's going to go very well. But we'll be there down with the ship, you know.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been watching Oilers highlights for the past couple of weeks. So here we go, man. Here we go. Vernon Perry, 4 interceptions, 1979.
Yeah, I was at work and I was looking at some stuff. And I was thinking about you specifically because they had that guy they drafted first overall and then traded for Corey Culp. And that guy ended up crashing his car and dying. It was Sloth in the Goonies.
Jeff Alm.
Yeah, Jeff Alm was what a world this was. And I was also looking at some Dan Marino stuff too. I was how you never win a Super Bowl? Because in 1980, he threw 43 touchdowns or whatever it was. And then I didn't realize he tore his ACL going to that Super Bowl. And they won a game 10-0 to play Washington that Super Bowl. And they had a kick return. And the Redskins run the ball 42 times that game to beat Miami. And I felt very bad about Dan Marino tearing his ACL.
Yep. And the whole Jeff Ohm thing, oh my God.
Were you excited for Jeff Ohm, or was it a bad pick from the beginning?
Oh.
He went to Tampa Bay State University.
Jeff Ohm was a... there's a story behind it. That's okay. It. That's all I can say.
Well, how about this? How about this offseason? I'll watch a bunch of Oiler games or Oiler highlights, and we can think about memories or something.
Memories.
Maybe get Die Hard Chris on the cast, too. We can do a memories podcast. Whenever it's like July, awesome. I'll turn the AC off. But that's for a future life. For now, that's the end of our show for tonight. We'll be back on Lair this week, and we'll preview all the divisional round games. I may be able to do a KC Texans deep dive. It's like, you know, 55 minutes long instead of something a little bit shorter as well. But until then, the Texans are playing the Chiefs at 2:30 on Sunday. We'll be back on next Monday night to talk about that game as well. So read the words on the side, listen to the podcast, tell your friends and family. Until next time, I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Wild Red Radio. Thank you for being on tonight, BFT.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.